Hello, good morning. As you know, Mark is traveling, is in some school and kind of camp. I will cover his lecture. He told me he started to discuss or almost finished the discussion about the transfer matrix in lattice field theory. As you know, it's important that the transfer matrix satisfies some properties in order to have a Euclidean theory that describes well what the Minkowski theory is intended to. So that the passing from Euclidean to Minkowski is sane and safe. And the properties are, well, they were stated by Osterwalder and Schrader. And well, some important property is about the transfer matrix. It must be symmetric, bounded, positive, and acting on a Hilbert space of positive norm. That's why it's interesting to study the transfer matrix if we cannot have a self-adjoint Hamiltonian, we cannot describe the Minkowski theory in Euclidean space. So, well, I think Mark presented some results. I will summarize a couple of them. So he define the transfer matrix between as so doing slice in T. And then he wrote the operator as now, I think he computed the matrix element, this matrix element. In the case of the phi to the fourth theory, the expression of this operator is the following. in terms of the canonical operators. Now, in the path integral formalism, we can show that the partition function, which is given by this expression, as we know, can be written as, sorry, so we can decompose the action in this product, no, using this slicing of the Lagrangian, and you can prove that this is equal to the trace of the transfer operator to the T. So T is the number of lattice points in the temporal dimension. Now, if we are interested in two-point Green function, for instance, so we want to compute this expectation value. This is of course defined by 1/z. The integral of the product of and it can be written using this type of thing, like the trace of the transfer operator. And if we insert eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, we can prove that this is this can be written like this. Where obviously the O1 and O2 operators are functions of functionals of the fields, and J and K and so on are eigenstates. So now, in the limit of large t, so if t goes to infinity, the expression can be written well, it's dominated by the largest eigenvalue, which is the ground state, and we can write this as now we have here this is the Hamiltonian, so we can use this expression to get And we arrive to the familiar expression. So we can compute the mass differences with respect to the ground state of the vacuum, or the vacuum, or whatever you call it. Okay. The only thing is that the difference is that we have here. Always, when we introduce a lattice discretization regularization, we have a discretization errors. No, that but this should disappear if we work in a region where the extrapolation to the continuum limit is feasible, in the so-called scaling region. Now. We made a step here. No. Yes. This limit. if we don't perform this limit, we can work similarly, but we will. Still have some finite volume effects in the game, and this can be treated consistently. And if you do the careful analysis, you can obtain still similar formula. But then, well, you need to keep into account these effects. Now. Yes. Let's move to the next item. And well, I hope perturbation theory is still, the lattice is a kind of regularization. So we still can work in perturbation theory, of course. And the only problem is that in this case, the computations are much more difficult because we break some. Symmetries like Lorentz invariance that makes that many diagrams that are forbidden by the symmetry appear in the computation. restricted to perturbative values of the scale of energy or momentum. Of course, we have an ultraviolet cutoff, which is a lattice spacing, but usually in practice this is beyond perturbation, the point where perturbation theory is valid. So another good feature of the lattice regularization is that permits to study errors systematically. So we can. There are many methods, many approaches to study different sources of errors, and the goal is to get results that are unbiased, so they are free of systematic errors. Of course, this is very difficult always, and there is a lot of work behind this, usually for getting one simple quantity. But the good point is that you can have reasonable confidence that you estimated a good value for a certain quantity with an error, which is always present when you do a computation. Any computation has an error by definition, I think, in physics at least, no? So it is good to have a tool that permits you to estimate the errors. So the main sources of errors are finite lattice spacing and finite volume. Then, of course, in this approach, you can get, you always keep statistical errors, right? But you can also control them, and you can have some, you can do some work in to establish a proper value for these errors. Now, there are, of course, many disadvantages of this approach. For instance, I mentioned before that if you plan to do perturbation theory for whatever reason, perhaps you need some perturbative estimation of some quantity, or to do some matching with continuum theory or whatever. This is very hard, and the convergence of the perturbative series is much worse than in the continuum. Another disadvantage could be that you don't have analytic results. You don't have equations. You don't have analytic results. So, actually, the computations are like doing experiments. You do a numerical experiment where you obtain some field configurations, and you measure your observables on top of using these configurations. So you do experiment, you do theory, and you do analysis. And it's not always easy to master all these parts in the computations. And it's really a huge work. And in actual scenarios, you devote months or years to compute the field configurations, and then you need to do analysis on top of or using these configurations. It's not an easy way, but usually, one can achieve one can get a very very good or very the purpose is to get very precise results. Okay, so how do we do this in practice? It is used a technique called Monte Carlo. And obviously the name comes from the city, no? It's a kind of it refers to some kind of stochastic estimator of quantities. So let us consider the simple case of quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics, one dimension, and periodic time. So now the action is the following, is functional of the distances. Sorry, the positions. And as always, we can compute correlation functions using the standard thing. The standard expression for in path integral, in the path integral approach. And of course, it's needless to say that the times belong to the set. Now the question is the following. Is it possible to make a computation, a naive integration of this? Let us take, for instance, t equals 100. And then we have 100 variables in the integration, right? If we use, if we discretize these integration variables, and let's say that we also use 100 points for each, for extension of the space, we get that, so let me write it. then we will have 100 to the 100 operations to perform the integration. Points and yeah, this is unfeasible for any computer, and this is a simple case of one-dimensional system, right? The situation doesn't improve when you go to field theory. In that case, in that case, we have instead of one dimension, we have instead of having the time, we have L to the third and times the time extension. If we work in a four-dimensional field theory, so yeah. We have 100 to the 4 points, and then, well, we need to, if we discretize this naively, we have this number of appears, no, this number of operations single elements in our discretization. So it's hopeless to attack this problem using Simpson or trapezoidal or whatever rule of integration. But there is a way out. And yeah, as I said before, the way out is evaluating the integral with stochastic methods. The result comes with as I said before, with statistical errors, but in principle, we can achieve an unbiased result, meaning that we fight hard against systematic errors, which is not possible in other approaches, because, and this is because lattice computations are ab initio computations, right? What is, sorry. What is a Monte Carlo algorithm? Well, it's not, it's more a family of algorithms, right? The basic idea is the following. We obtain the path in quantum mechanics uh, Then, so yes, we produce the path. It depends on what you are interested in. For instance, the fields in quantum field theory, or the path in quantum mechanics. Following a probability distribution given by the exponential of minus the action divided by the partition function. In this case, we can see that for the case of quantum mechanics, or obviously, for actual computations, the Green function in the real world, we will have finite statistics, so we'll maintain the our estimator of the green function will be this one plus statistical errors. And so the steps to follow are the following. We generate field configurations or paths following this probability distribution, and then we compute the observables we're interested in using this field configuration. So for each field configuration we compute, we make a computation of this observable, and then do a simple arithmetic average of all the results. And the theory statistics tells you that this is a very good estimator of the green function you're interested in, up to statistical errors. Okay. Now, you can try to well, the question now is how you produce field configurations that follow this particular probability distribution. This is the non-trivial question. And also naive trials will fail. What is very interesting, and most of the algorithms that are used or are in the market for gauge fields or field theories in general, is the Markov chains. The is a mathematical tool that permits you to obtain gauge configurations or field configuration with this probability distribution. And I would like to say a few words about Markov chains. This is a very deep subject in mathematics and has applications in many fields like biology, physics, both theoretical and applied physics, and communications, etc. But I will just give a couple of definitions to show or to introduce this interesting topic and to motivate the why this is useful for the problem in our hands. Yeah, there are many references about this, but I think it's too much for us. Now, this is a basic definition. So, a stochastic process is defined as follows. So stochastic, well, actually a discrete time stochastic process is a sequence of random variables. And we will use discrete indices for, I mean, we will restrict ourselves to discrete cases. The second definition is a Markov chain. Let X of N Now, do you understand this notation? So the probability of having this x0, x1, x2, xn variables, of having this, I mean, the probability of getting this once you have these values is equal to the probability of getting this depending only on the previous point. So if both sides are defined and this holds, we say that the sequence of random variables is a Markov chain. Okay? So it's kind of, yeah, from one state, we go to the other, and we forget about the previous step when we decide which is the next step. So a Markov chain can be defined given the initial distribution, and
and
so don't forget that the variables are random variables, so each of them follows a probability distribution, okay? And in principle, each of them could follow different probability distribution, right? So on top of that, we have a transition matrix, which is defined as follows. So this is the definition of the transition probability or transition matrix. It's an object that from the previous probability distribution of the states produces the next probability distribution in the Markov chain. Now, I don't know, I've been told that there is a questionnaire today, right? But I think we still have some minutes. Of course, if the probability distribution of states is changing all the time, it's not what we want. We are aiming at having the same probability distribution for all the states, right? So, So all the transition matrices are the same for one state to the following. For yes, in the irrespective of the point in the Markov chain where you are. Since all the entries in this matrix are probabilities, and since the transition from any state must be to any other state, some other state, it is easy to understand that these two properties, well, I also write it in this way for the case of homogeneous transition matrices. The entries of the matrix are positive or zero, and the sum over I of Tij is one, because yeah, if you one state must go to any other, to some of the other states. So this is a matrix satisfying these properties is called a stochastic matrix. Next definition is about invariant distributions. We say that some distribution is invariant. With respect to the Markov chain. Transition well, in general, we could add the time if all the states have the same probability distribution. And we say that this distribution is invariant. Okay. And this is what we are looking for. Now, it's already 9:45. I've been told that I have to finish at 9:45, but nobody. Let me see if she's waiting. Yeah, the problem is that I don't have a proper. Let me see if I can get. Hi. Yes, I found some.
Awesome. Thank
you. So I don't know how is the protocol. There is this questionnaire about this lecture, no? To you. And I don't know if I have to leave and before the lady comes or I have to wait. Do you know what is?
There is no protocol.
So I can wait till she comes?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Okay, so there is one definition more and one on, and only one, well, a couple of definitions, but we'll conclude on Friday. Now, I think Frau Vella will do a questionnaire for you.